Welcome to First Things First. Good morning, I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright.
That would be me.
She's taking out of your pocket a little pen action, ready to go.
Yes.
Pen highlighter. I would like to congratulate you, Jenna Wolf.
I thought you told me to take over the opening.
You're right.
This guy right here, we're doing makeup. He's like, Chris, I need you to be a little more excited when we start the show. I need you to sit, I'm going to sit back a little bit, and I need you and Jenna there. I was like, Nick, I got you today.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I come out.
Yeah.
And there it is. I knew if I said just a little thing, it would engage you, and now
guess
here
what?
We are.
It totally works.
It's heavy lifting.
It's heavy lifting having to do the 30-second open all by myself and then sit back for 2 hours.
So I tried to have
59
your back.
Minutes and 30 seconds.
There you go. That was really good math on the fly, Jenna.
Thank you very much.
Did that back time from 3 hours.
Don't expect anything else after that. So what do you got?
Great way to start a Monday show. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's go.
Let's do it. Let's go. It's Tuesday. If you are spending your NBA offseason chomping at the bit to see Boogie Cousins in a Warriors game, keep chomping. You guys didn't think I knew what day it was. Boogie is still recovering, they told me in my ear, from an Achilles injury he suffered in January. And while he recently told reporters he wants to be ready by training camp in September, Warriors GM Bob Myers has a slightly different timetable in mind. Take a listen.
You can't really tell with a guy, any guy, him or any guy, until they get on the court and do certain things.
Sure.
But the goal for us would be to have him in the playoffs. That doesn't mean we'll wait till the playoffs, but when he's ready to play, he'll play. We just don't know when that'll be.
All right, so CeCe, you kind of heard him there. They're thinking playoffs is more the timetable, which is when they actually really need him. Whether he's ready before then or not, we'll see. How hard will it be for Boogie to fit in on this Warriors team if he isn't ready until the end of the season?
Well, I believe the general manager is doing the right thing because they've taken the window and they've extended it. Most people that talk about Boogie said he should be ready to play or definitely do on-court stuff in December, January. Then people talk about the All-Star break, that being February. So if you as the general manager are sending the message to not only throughout the organization but to your fans, man, we're not expecting him to. When did the playoffs start, Nick?
Right, April.
April. I mean, you've extended that window so in case you have a setback. Because we know the Warriors, the pressure is not on the regular season. It's about the postseason. And if you can think about how they've dominated the postseason the last 2 years, and that's the only thing he's got to get ready. To me, that alleviates a lot of pressure compared to people would say, well, on the other side, if he doesn't play during the regular season, it's a bunch of pressure. Well, in the playoffs, I mean, how contested will they be in the first round? Now, I do believe that the regular season is important because how the seeding might go in the West. You don't want to be the third seed. You don't want to be the fourth seed. You want to be in the one or two slot, which they have been in this run that they've on.
Like, they would be the heavy favorites to be the one seed, even though they weren't last year, had they not gotten Boogie. There's no situation that can arise, I would imagine, this season where they're not the one or the two seed because there's not a team that I'm like, oh, they were really close and they got much better, and right. The Warriors didn't get worse. To me, this is a bit of mental games, and I don't say that with a negative connotation. It's just they are setting the table, in my eyes, for if when Boogie does come back, which will be during the regular season, he isn't immediately getting the minutes that he thought he would, mm-hmm. the touches that he thought he would, they can say, hey, man, it's always been part of the plan. It's always been for you to be full go come the playoffs. Don't worry about it right now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And then also I think a guy that might be a little disgruntled about his lack of playing time in a regular season game in February, harder to be that type of distraction for your team in your first ever playoff appearance, where all of a sudden you're playing with a bunch of champions, the two-time defending champions, and if wait till the playoffs. And if that carrot they've been extending, you never actually get to grab, it's hard to raise too much of a ruckus because now you're in your first playoffs. Mm-hmm. I do want to say this, though. If Bob Myers is correct, like if this were to be the actual case, that Boogie is not ready for full go until the playoffs, then this will have been just a useless experiment. Because what they will not do, I can say this with almost full certainty, unless they suffer some significant injury, is have one lineup and rotation throughout the regular season and then come the playoffs, drastically remake it to fit Boogie in. Boogie is going to have to start fitting in before the playoffs for him to be useful in the playoffs.
There's a very big difference, though, between what Boogie seems to think and what Myers seems to be saying. Boogie's like, I'll be ready by training camp. And it is an 8 to 10 month rehab period with the Achilles. That is much more than an 8 to 10 month rehab. I think what Bob Myers is doing, which is obvious, is he's tempering expectations so that someone like Boogie Cousins, who tends to maybe have a bit of maybe an irrational approach to where he should be and how he fits in, doesn't start pounding his fist. But my question to you would be, wouldn't this be a conversation that his people would have had with the Warriors before signing on? Like, look, hey, this is where we need you. I mean, maybe the Warriors themselves are thinking, hey, you know where we could use him? In the postseason, where the Rockets got close. But let's maybe have this conversation with him so he knows.
I don't think there were extended conversations. I think the conversations were what Steve Kerr said they were. Listen, there's going to be 4, 5, 6 possessions. You don't touch the basketball. You good with that? Yep. We're going to be very cautious with your rehab approach. You good with that? Absolutely. Now, again, like I don't think Bob Myers is coming out there saying he won't play until the playoffs. He's just he is setting the goalpost so far down the field that whenever Boogie comes back, the Warriors can stay ahead of schedule and start building that narrative for him, which is the best thing the Warriors can do for DeMarcus Cousins this season, is help him repair his image. Part of that also, by the way, is help the rest of the league think he's healthy, rehab went well, he's ahead of schedule.
Yeah, and we also can't forget how they acquired DeMarcus Cousins. He called them. They didn't call him. So he called them. In their response, they didn't even believe the first initial contact. So in having several conversations, they say it took 3 conversations for the general manager and them to be kind of believe that, yeah, this might happen. I'm sure they got the injury report and they've got the doctor's information. They couldn't have signed him without trying to look into that. And like you talked about, the conversation with Steve Kerr, Steve let him know as far as what some of the things that we're thinking. When you have an injured player like DeMarcus, who has been an all-star, you want to try to remove the expectations or kind of maybe downplay with your expectations early to give him a chance. Also, this is a strange injury. It's not an ACL. It's not something that we deal with all the time. We're talking about an Achilles. We haven't seen the elite players, our NBA players, come back and do as well as they have done, except in 30 years, we've seen Dominic Wilkins do that. We haven't seen Kobe and a bunch of other players.
Elton Brand, who's stylistically similar. He has 2 careers, pre-Achilles, post-Achilles.
You know, so I believe that they're going about it the right way. They have won 2 out of the last 3 championships. There is no pressure during the regular season, so why put that pressure on their newly acquired player in DeMarcus Cousins?
All right, there's one guy whose name we haven't mentioned much when it comes to the Warriors and DeMarcus Cousins, but I think he is the player that could be the key to how this thing works and how much DeMarcus can handle what will be a much lesser role than he's had anywhere else, and that's Andre Iguodala. Because Andre Iguodala walked into a situation very different than Boogie. He was traded for having started every single game of his career. Every game Iggy had been healthy from his rookie season to the moment he got traded to the Warriors, he was a starter for. He's traded there thinking, I'm going to be a starter. Steve Kerr then makes some changes. Draymond becomes a starter. A lot of things happen. And he has to go to Andre Iguodala and say, You're not a starter, and you're never going to be a starter. His first 3 years there, he started 1 game. Last year, he started 7 due to injury. And Iggy, it was hard for him early on, but he eventually realized how he could be used and why it was good for the team as a whole. He didn't sign up for that. He was thrown into that. Andre Iguodala is a respected veteran in this league and is a guy who has had no winning experience prior to coming to Golden State. All he got in Golden State, he got no all-star appearances, he got none of that stuff. Mm-hmm. All he got was the championship pedigree capped off by the finals MVP. Andre Iguodala talking to DeMarcus Cousins about how to go through this part of a career, I think is incredibly valuable because Steph and KD and Klay don't have that experience. They don't have I went from the star guy to a lesser guy. He's the one guy who can talk DeMarcus through this.
That is a good point. All right, we'll take a break. Coming up, will LeBron James have regrets about signing in L.A.? That is next on Chris. While LeBron James is enjoying his first few weeks of life as a Laker, we are learning more now about his decision 3.0. Yes, he announced he would become a Laker on the opening night of free agency, but also, yes, league insiders believe it was a harder decision than most think. One 76er executive says LeBron very strongly considered coming to Philly. Nick, any chance LeBron regrets passing on the Sixers if the Lakers don't get Kawhi?
I don't think so. LeBron, absolutely, Philly was on the table. But by the time Philly got in the room with Rich Paul, I've been told LeBron had already made his decision. He was going to Los Angeles. But Philly, they did make the medal stand, if you will.
Yeah.
They were in the final three teams that he was considering, Houston right on the outside there. Listen, LeBron knew, no matter if they got Kawhi or not, that he obviously knew Paul George wasn't going there when he signed. Paul George already re-signed. That this was not the best place to win this season. This, if LeBron wanted to be mercenary LeBron and sign a one-year deal with Houston or with Philly and then potentially make another decision next year, do another short-term contract, there were places he could go that would be an easier path back to the NBA Finals and a more definite collection of talent around him for this season. LeBron made a long-term decision. Now, I think he's totally content with it. I think he's very confident they will be getting at least one additional all-star caliber player, most likely Kawhi Leonard. But he also knew that Kawhi Leonard wasn't a free agent and that that was no sure thing when he made this decision. So, no, I do not think that because they are yet to get Kawhi or even if they don't get Kawhi this year, LeBron would regret the decision because he didn't make the decision based on where is the best place to win a championship this season, because the Lakers would have been very low on that list.
Hey, Nick, the first time LeBron, decision number one, when he decided to take his talent to South Beach, who came second?
Who came in second that year? Was it Chicago?
All right. And then the second time he decided to go to Cleveland, surprise some people, mm-hmm. some other people not surprised, like myself.
Yes.
And you heard about it. What team was second in that time?
I think it was Miami, but you can tell me if I'm wrong. I thought Miami was staying in Miami was his best bet.
I think that whoever it was, it didn't matter because we weren't talking
Got
about
you.
It.
Got you. Okay, that's why I don't remember.
You know, so
fair enough.
The 76ers general manager at this point with the talented roster that they have, they should have moved on. He shouldn't be sitting there talking about, you know something? The girl gave me a kiss on the cheek, and we was getting ready to start going steady. But she wasn't even thinking about that. She was just trying to be polite. So I think it's really irrelevant who was second, who was third, and who was fourth.
But is there anything to the fact that maybe the Sixers released this as just one final little way to sell it to someone like Kawhi? Hey, listen, LeBron almost came here, and nothing but the best for LeBron. He ended up going to the Lakers, but he almost came here. He was deciding, like, could that be a carrot that has been dangled?
The guy didn't have anything else better to talk about. Kawhi has not shown any interest in trying to come to Philadelphia. They have been crystal clear as far as what their goals were. And when people tried to distort what his actual goals were, they reiterated, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to go to Los Angeles. It don't have to be with the Lakers, but Los Angeles is our destination. And, sidebar, there is no Paul George situation. There is no situation where Kawhi is going to be convinced after a year. So I don't see the value in the front office person releasing this information. And given that they don't have a general manager in place, like, it was going to be hard to land LeBron. If you know the LeBron story and you know how family-oriented this decision was going to be. Now, LeBron and his group, they did, I give them this, they did do some research. They did check on the schools and everything in Philadelphia as far as where his sons and where his kids would be going to school. But that's about it. LeBron had two houses already in Los Angeles. Magic Johnson was already in place, ready to knock on his door at midnight when he could as a free agent Eastern Standard Time. So, yeah, I can understand Philadelphia, but then you have almost a championship roster. You should be concentrating on that compared to doing interviews talking about, you know, I almost missed on that. Almost. So you know what's going to happen now? If they don't make it to the NBA Finals, they don't make it to the Eastern Conference, people are still going to be asking them questions. Man, do you guys feel like if you had LeBron James? That ship has sailed. It's time to move on.
In Philly's defense, it was one of the managing partners, so it's not the GM or the coach. It's one of the guys at the top of the organization.
They don't exactly have a GM right now.
No, but I'm saying this was a guy at ownership level that was making these comments.
Yeah.
All right, but I want to say something about LeBron and this decision to the Lakers. And maybe LeBron will be proven foolhardy for this, but there is a narrative that is starting to build that it wasn't that family wasn't just part of the equation, that the brand and the city and the lifestyle in Los Angeles weren't just part of the equation, but they were the entirety of the equation, that LeBron has given up the idea that he's going to compete for any more championships. That's flatly false. And listen, LeBron clearly believes that not only is he still the best player in the league, but that that will remain the case for next year, the year after, likely the year after that. And you know who's a contender? Any team that has him on it. That's his mindset. And that that will stay, maintain being the case for the next few seasons. And that even after those few seasons, he's got a couple more quality seasons left. Now, NBA history says it's almost impossible for that to be true.
Right.
But he believes that to be true. So the idea that he went to the Lakers and now has just decided winning titles is no longer going to be part of my story, he would say that is flatly false. Now, bodies betray guys. And Father Time, as everyone says, is undefeated eventually.
But no one has a resume like LeBron going against Father Time year 15.
He's already in unprecedented territory.
Yes.
He thinks he is going to extend that to triple unprecedented territory. Maybe he might be proven wrong. Maybe if mid-year 16 suffers an injury and, like, you never see this version of LeBron again, you might say, he'd have been better off in Houston or Philly. That is not something he is in the least bit concerned about.
So let's get back to the headline here in that the Sixers say LeBron was definitely deciding and seriously, strongly considering the Sixers. How much of that and LeBron's decision to go to the Lakers instead has to do with what happened in the Sixers organization with Colangelo leaving and with sort of the disarray with the Sixers brass?
I don't believe that was the final thing, but I believe that when you're looking at a decision like this, it's part of the equation. Because when you don't know who the general manager is, and based on LeBron's past, you have to remember that having a strong general manager is a huge part to LeBron's success. Went to Miami under Pat Riley. Success immediately. And a lot of the basketball decisions, like the things that LeBron got blamed for the last 4 years, he didn't get blamed for that in Miami. You know why? Strong general manager in Pat Riley. So not having a general manager, it does hurt your chances. But the weather, the motion picture, the movie industry, LeBron does a lot of strive for greatness hashtag, but he also talks about the James gang now. That means his wife, his daughter, the two sons. Now, they were definitely, which I have been persuaded to believe, that they wanted to be in Los Angeles. It was going to be hard for his sons to play basketball under LeBron's at his high school that he went to in the Akron area. So I'm not surprised at all that they decided Los Angeles. Also, when you have no general manager and you have Magic Johnson, there's a huge difference in doing that they would have to overcome.
I here's the point there that I disagree with you. Magic is a trump card for a lot of things. I think if LeBron really wanted to go to Philadelphia, or if it was close, I think the general manager situation actually could have benefited Philly. Because he could have said, sometimes you get to pick your coach. You never get to pick your general manager. Because of the situation, the odd situation that their general manager is fired, not because of on-court failure, but because of nonsense off the court, and the guy LeBron trusts in David Griffin is still out there waiting for the perfect job, LeBron could have said, I'll come here, but you need to hire Griffin. And I believe they would have done that. So I don't think the Colangelo thing hurt the Sixers' chances. I think the Sixers were on the board, and then he made the decision, do I want to ever have to make another change in team? Do I want to ever have to make a decision 4.0? The Lakers are the team he's confident he'll never have to do that again with.
All right, we'll take a break. Coming up, Rob Gronkowski. He's hoping to just play for one more team, or is he? Still on the trading block? Next, first things first. First to start your morning. Toronto Raptors are generating buzz as another spot where Kawhi Leonard could get traded. Nick, any chance Kawhi ends up in Toronto?
Listen, Toronto's an interesting one because everyone forgets Toronto. Like, LeBron left the East. They won 59 games. Right now they've brought everyone back. If you were to flip either DeRozan or Lowry for Kawhi for 1 year, could you be with Philly and Boston in the East? Sure. It would be And also, by the way, there aren't many cities in the NBA that are further away from Los Angeles than Toronto. So it'd be a bit of a bleep you from the Spurs if that's where they were to send him. I think it's a bit of a pipe dream, but it's interesting basketball-wise.
Yeah, I don't see the assets, even though they do have those two star players. I don't see the combination of players and draft picks that would allow him. And I have to check with Kawhi and them. Let me see if T.O. got any closer to that, because that's what they call Toronto. They call it T.O. See if it got any closer to Los Angeles, because I know last time I talked to Kawhi's group, Los Angeles was the only destination.
Like, is Kawhi cool with Drake? Maybe Drake can do a little sell job for him? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
All right, let's move on to Jaylen Brown. Despite scoring 14 points, 5 rebounds last season, turning a number of heads, Jaylen says he isn't too good for summer league, and he'll consider playing a few games despite the risk of injury. CC, would this be a smart move for Jaylen Brown?
No, of course not. But I like the fact that he said it. Now, but it also speaks to what they might have with the Celtics in, because we know Kyrie might not want to be there, but between him and Jason Tatum, you got unique young guys, wing players that have game experience, got better in the playoffs than the regular season, and you know something? They love basketball. They love being out there. So that part I really understand and like and believe that's something that I can build on within this organization.
I think there's one underrated part of this, which is Jaylen Brown probably, even if it's just summer league, is thirsting for the opportunity to have a new basketball game be the most recent one he played, not game 7 against the Cavs, which was what maybe the worst game he'd ever played in his career. He was 0 for everything from 3. Like, he's obviously too good for summer league. Obviously, the injury risk is too high, but he's coming off his lowest professional moment. He wants to get on the court again in a real game, try to erase it a little bit.
Tough loss for the Houston Rockets. The Clippers signed Luke Richard and Mbamute to a one-year deal. Houston had already lost Trevor Ariza to the Suns. Nick, how big of a deal is this for the Rockets?
I don't think it's a big deal. Rockets fans are panicked about this. He was essentially unplayable due to injury in the playoff run. And they, despite that, they still went to 7 with the Warriors up 3-2 in the series. Daryl Morey said yesterday, their entire goal in signing free agents is to sign guys that can outplay their contracts. They got Mbamute last year for $2 million, and people are wondering if he's replaceable. Of course he's replaceable.
I doubt that on this. I disagree with you, because if you look at the wing players that they have to throw at Golden State, they got two less wing players. And if you look at reasons why, absent of Chris Paul and his injury, you can go to his injury being the most significant thing that happened to Houston. They didn't have enough bodies to throw at Kevin Durant, and he wasn't as good offensively because his shoulder shooting the basketball. They will suffer from these two losses, not just this one loss. It's the combination of both of these long, lengthy players.
Ariza and Bob.
Yes.
All right, finally, LeBron James officially signed with the Lakers yesterday. His former head coach, Ty Lue, met with his new head coach, Luke Walton, to discuss the challenges of coaching LeBron. See, how tough will Luke Walton's job be in year one?
I don't think it's that tough. The toughest job was the first assignment that he got was coaching the team that he coached last season. That was tough. Now, at least you got a superstar. You got direction. The game got easier for him with him and Rondo. Coaches on the court. Luke Walton, to me, his job got a lot easier. People would be like, well, now he's going to be under the pressure. That's what you want to be as a coach. You want a team that's relevant. You want players that can dominate and take over the game, because that part, he has to coach less now. Now, he's got to be more efficient. He's got to be accountable for his coaching, but he's got to coach less, because once LeBron gets the ball on the court or Rondo, there's a certain amount of coaching that they will do. They will take over on the court some of that from Luke.
Wait, hold on quick. So who has final say? So now it's a play that's going to get called. Maybe Luke calls a play. LeBron doesn't like it. You have a situation like this. Who has final say?
Luke has final say. I don't even want to get into LeBron trying to veto a play being called. But a lot of the NBA, it's not calling plays. It's getting the ball off the glass and trying to get up the court as soon as possible. Also, the Lakers, what do? They lead the NBA as far as pace. As far as the way they've played at a pace. So there's not going to be a whole bunch of situations we have to sit down. Well, who has the call?
And
that really doesn't matter.
It's fleetingly rare. I know yesterday I brought up the specific example
of
LeBron vetoing David Blatt. That is the reason I can bring up that specific example is because that doesn't happen very often.
It was more metaphorical, like who owns the locker room, like who's got the say, who's got the loudest voice.
Listen, the LeBron, if you listen to what Ty Lue said, there's a great article in the
Athletic.
There's
no team
yesterday.
LeBron's ever going to be on. Someone's going to have a bigger voice than him. I mean, he's LeBron James. He's got the best resume in the NBA. Who would want to try to supersede that? Who would want to be like, you know something? I know more basketball.
But what LeBron won't do, and Ty Lue talks about this in the article, is he never curses out a coach in front of the teammates or really at all.
Now, he cusses a lot, though. You have to.
Right, but there are, Ty Lue talked about a guy like Kobe, and this is not a knock at Kobe, but that Kobe would curse you up and down if he felt it was necessary. It's not LeBron's style. I also think we have to recognize what Luke Walton has been through in his two seasons. This will be his third as head coach. His first season as a head coach of the Lakers, he deals with that nonsense with D'Angelo Russell and Nick Young. The surreptitiously recorded video, superstar girlfriend, angry cheating allegations, right? Last year, he deals with the nonsense of LeVar constantly questioning him, questioning his job, questioning how good he is, and all the things going on with Lonzo. Yes, there will be much more scrutiny, right? There will be much more decisions. Ty talks about this in the article, that if LeBron wears a different wristband, all of a sudden people are speculating, is LeBron in a bad mood? Is he sending a message? What's the wristband mean? He's got to be ready for that and used to that. But it is, I would imagine as a head coach, if 30 head coaches in the NBA, who's the guy you would most like to coach right now? Probably the best player in the league, who also can be something of a coach on the floor. Now, Rondo can be mercurial and difficult, but if Rondo buys in, and that's going to be one of the tougher relationships, but if Rondo buys in, he's another coach on the floor. They also signed veteran players. Like, listen, Lance is a bit of a knucklehead. JaVale can be goofy, but those are veteran players. You're not teaching them how to play NBA basketball. Those guys know how to play NBA.
And also, you have to take the time that he spent with Golden State. I know people like to discredit that because Golden State was so good. But dealing with superstar players on a day-to-day basis, Steve Kerr, he has the issue as far as his health. He can't be there. Luke Walton is the last voice. Now, you talk about Myers, the general manager, the great ownership, but Luke Walton is in the locker room on the road with these guys. And I believe that that time will be well served in taking over the Lakers with a LeBron James. I think people get caught too much up into the voices of strong players. As long as you have sports, you're going to have strong voices as far as players. And as long as you're playing this game, you need guys who understand the game. Luke Walton's a coach for a reason, all right? Athletically, his athletic ability took him so far. Now, he has the ability of the intellect of an NBA coach, but also the personal experience of being in those locker rooms. And I believe when you have players like LeBron, Rondo, and some of the other veterans, it's an asset to be able to have that information.
All right, let's move on to some football now. And Rob Gronkowski. And while the Patriots training camp gets underway in a little over 2 weeks, the Rob Gronkowski trade rumors just won't go away. One AFC executive commented that until New England restructures his contract, Gronk may still be available. See, do you see the Pats dealing Gronk at this point?
No, just another stupid report. He said he may be available. Well, we got 16 days. Now, do you guys think that
16 days until when?
Until they start training camp.
Gotcha.
So they got, Jenna said they got a little more than 2 weeks. So do you see Bill Belichick taking out Tom Brady's knees before he starts this season, which he's going to turn 41? Now, I don't see that. Now, Bill, people don't see his personality, but there's no way that he is trying to get Super Bowl number 6 by moving Gronkowski. It don't make sense. Look at their roster. They don't have another receiving tight end on their roster. They got Dwayne Allen as the backup. You know, look at his, if he had a career year, look at him filling in for Gronk if he was the starter. Look at their wide receivers. Let's go down the list. Edelman on the deck for 4 weeks. Jordan Matthews, Chris Hogan, Cordell Patterson, special teams players they're going to try to utilize in their offense. Malcolm Mitchell, hurt. Philip Dorsett, a bust, the first-round pick from the University of Miami. So y'all tell me this roster that they're going to trade Gronk. They can't afford to trade Gronk. When I look at this roster, like it would be one of the baddest moves that I have seen in the NFL for a team that had Super Bowl aspirations, because I believe immediately those Super Bowl aspirations would be removed.
Oh, wow. Okay, that last part's really interesting.
Oh, you look at this roster without Gronk. And you tell me something warm and fuzzy or sexy about this roster.
So if they were to trade Gronk, that the Pats, who are the biggest favorites to make the playoffs, they win the division every year, you don't think they'd have enough talent to compete for a Super Bowl?
I don't see the people here. I don't see how they're going to be able to do it. Wasn't their defense one of the worst in the NFL last year? Did they go out and get a bunch of free agents or something on the defensive side going to change that?
Well, that's the only way that I see this being a real possibility. Because we got to keep in mind, like, the Pats trade history, right? So they traded Brandon Cooks this offseason, knowing who their wide receivers were. But that was before the draft. That was when they were acquiring, yeah, they acquired a pick, but they knew they were getting a human being this year from that 23rd overall pick they got from the Rams. If you trade Gronk at this point, even if you get a first-round pick for him, which is what they got for Cooks, that doesn't pay dividends until next year. The only way I would see this as a possibility is if it were a player-for-player trade. But those are so rare in the NFL. Like, everyone remembers the Champ Bailey for Clinton Portis trade. You know why everyone remembers it? Because that might have been the last time two star players were traded for each other. We had Kiko Alonso traded for Shady McCoy, Max Unger for Jimmy Graham along some draft pick compensation. It's so rare that NFL teams go, okay, you need a tight end. We need help in the secondary. Let's call up the Rams and do a trade where we give you Gronk and you give us one of your surplus secondary guys. Like, that just that doesn't really happen in this league. It happens in baseball, obviously. Happens all the time in the NBA. The only reason I can't just immediately just reject it, though, is the Pats do a lot of things that most teams that are in win-now mode don't do, because Belichick never seems to really be operating under the lens of we're in win-now exclusively. He always seems to be operating under the lens of extending this as long as possible. And so that's why, like, it didn't make sense to me them trading the Chandler Jones when they did. But they traded him.
It made sense to me because they had some off-the-field issues. They didn't want to invest the guarantees. They're not going to give him that big contract. So it made sense because they weren't going to sign him. So why let him walk in free agency when you know you're not going to resign? They had to trade him, and they had that stuff in the background as far as his character that they were concerned about.
Why won't they just wrap this up, extend his contract, and move on? Both sides need each other.
Because
what's
they know
the reason for the game?
Well, they know that he's injury prone. They don't want to invest a lot of money in him long term, because they don't do that with veteran players. You don't see them extend veteran players and give them guaranteed money. That's the reason why this will continue.
For Gronk, in your opinion, it's felt to me when he showed up after not showing up for a lot of the offseason that they were close on some type of, even if it's not a contract extension,
right,
some salary increase, right? We thought that they were getting closer on giving him more money.
Well, Gronk had told us, based on being there, that something had changed. I just believe in the conversation, they have made a promise to Gronk. Also, you have to go back to the report. This report's not coming from New England. It's coming from another team in the AFC. So, of course, in July, let's send out something about New England. So that's another distraction off of this team that you don't have. Ask the guy about his team, all right, compared to about New England. He's not an expert on New England. So when I look at this roster, I would be shocked because of the best player in the NFL and Tom Brady, how it would affect him. People talk about, Lawyer Malloy, they traded him right before the season. Their roster was so much better. Their defense was a dominant defense, and Tom Brady was not approaching 41. So that's why I look at this report or rumor as I don't give it much credibility.
All right, we're going to take a break. Coming up on the other side, Carmelo Anthony waved by the Thunder, thinking Houston, but could beef with an old coach keep Carmelo out of Houston? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Yahoo NBA insider Jordan Schultz now joining the show again.
Good to see you, brother.
Great to be back.
Thank
you. Great to have you.
Okay, we do NBA. Are you also NFL insider or
yes,
just NBA?
NFL.
Okay, so we
both.
just Insider. Okay, no problem. Yeah.
So you're basically going to be here year round.
Yeah.
Well, if you guys want me, I'm hanging. But I got to tell you, you're going to get sick of me.
I said the same thing, Jordan. I said the same thing, and I'm still here since. Don't give me that look. Since September, I'm not even making eye contact with you.
Nick's giving you a nasty.
I know, every day, Jordan.
Chris is looking at me. All right.
Between the two of us.
You brought it on yourself there, Jenna. I didn't. Nobody asked you to walk through that door.
I told them. They gave you a contract.
Right, you don't got nothing to worry about.
Jordan's trying to get a contract.
I got 10 days.
Jordan's on a 10-day.
I got a 10-day.
I got
a 10-day. And he believes he can do it.
All right. Here we go. Carmelo Anthony likely will be in search of a new team with all signs pointing to the Thunder moving on. And about that moving on, it's a bit of a don't let the door hit you on the way out. Melo coming off a rough year, but it's not stopping the suitors. According to Adrian Wojnarowski, the Rockets are determined to sign him, despite Melo's previous relationship with Mike D'Antoni when he coached the Knicks. Jordan, what do you think? Would Carmelo be a good fit in Houston with the pieces they currently have in place?
Yeah, well, I said yesterday, people around the league believe that he's going to end up a Houston Rocket. The issue with Carmelo and Mike D'Antoni was he was never a Mike D'Antoni kind of player. When he went from Denver to the Knicks, he was about bully ball, isolation, 18 feet away, face up, jab, jab, dribble, all of that. That's not Mike D'Antoni. But I think now,
I think people might be surprised when you think about D'Antoni and the type of players and scores that he had.
They think it's all offense, no defense.
Yeah.
So Melo would be perfect. But the way Melo scores,
as not an efficient 3-point shooter. Now, last year he made 169.
And ball stopper.
That won't work. And at 34 years old, in the twilight of his career, now he can sit down with Chris Paul, who, you know, I've said is advocating for him to be there. And Chris Paul can say, Melo, this is what we need. You're a microwave. You come off the bench. You play a role. Spread the floor. But you cannot be pounding the ball into the pavement like you did in Denver and with the Knicks to an even more degree. So, to me, with Mike D'Antoni, he's not a guy that holds grudges. He's a guy that was ahead of his time. When he shepherded in this new system, that was way ahead of his time. Carmelo was not committed to that style of basketball. But now, I think he can be.
I think that given what's happened with Trevor Ariza going to the Suns, yesterday's development, our boy Luke Richard, Bamute, decides to go to the Clippers. Yeah, Nick, I got it right.
You got it.
Yeah, as soon as he gets traded
to the team, we'll never talk about it again.
Cameron Prince,
right.
Thank you.
There you go.
That's a lob.
Absolutely.
Now, the space that's available in the lineup for Melo, to me, it's more advantageous for him to go there now compared to looking at the wing players they had. My biggest problem is going to be the buy-in defensively, because that's what I saw from these other players. I saw their stars, Chris Paul, Harden, Ariza, all these guys sacrifice everything, offense, but more on the defensive end, and they played. If you can be a Houston team that play defense on a rope, they played on a rope as much as they have. I've seen that collection of players play on a rope.
I agree with you, but I credit three guys primarily for that.
Capella.
I think if you have Capella, P.J. Tucker, and Chris Paul playing big minutes, you're going to have a good defense. Chris Paul, even at this age, one of the best.
But if you don't have the buy-in switching, especially in the Western Conference, that's the problem.
You're dead.
Agreed. Yeah. You have to. The guys have to buy into it. I agree with that. But they don't have to be naturally gifted defenders. Eric Gordon ain't no great defender, but he bought in. So you're right that Melo has to buy into it. But I think sometimes guys go from they're so underrated, they become overrated. And sometimes the opposite happens. Melo, his last couple years in New York, was an overrated basketball player. I remember that NBA rank thing came out, and Melo was, I don't know, I think he was like 27th. And people were, oh, are you kidding me? And that was about right. At one point, he was overrated. And now I think we've swung too far in the other direction. Because I'm going to bring up another guy that could go to any team this offseason, and will go to some, and he'll be signed for around the money that Melo's going to end up signing for, off-the-bench scorer, and no one's going to say one bad word about him. Jamal Crawford.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it.
Jamal Crawford, by the way, last year shot the same percentage from the field as Melo, shot a worse percentage from three, ain't no defender. And Jamal Crawford, because he is properly rated and you know what you're getting with him, you'd be like, oh, he could be
but
a good bench
Jamal
option.
Jamal Crawford knows where he's rated.
Yes,
I
that's
think the problem is Carmelo doesn't see himself the way the rest of the league sees him.
And he doesn't guard anybody. I mean, we talked about it yesterday. That's why he couldn't play in the playoffs. Forget the fact that he goes 0-9 in Game 7 versus Utah. He couldn't guard anybody. And so my thing with the Rockets last year was the first time under D'Antoni, and really for the Rockets, they go top 10 defensive efficiency. That was a big difference and a big boost for them. If Carmelo goes there and he's not willing to guard anybody, what are we talking about? He can't be on the floor.
Well, listen, I guess maybe I think people evolve, and even if they don't go through some cataclysmic change, I think sometimes drastic life events can help you take a step back. Melo being waived for the first time in his basketball life. Melo seeing an enormous...
Wait.
Yeah.
They gave him $28 million to go home.
Yeah.
Well, they're about to, yeah.
He wasn't waived, bruh.
Well, that they're
paying him to leave.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. That's what being waived is, right? Where they're like,
no, being waived is you ain't getting paid. Well, that's a setback.
That's the sure.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Bought out.
Well, I don't know if he's going to buy out or waived, but regardless, the point is they are. That's more to my point. We would rather, and a lot of this has to do with luxury tax. We have to pay you this money no matter what. We're better off without you than with you. Is what Melo is going to be receiving. Also, he's going to be, for the first time in his basketball career, being teamed with a guy that he, I don't want to say looks up to, but that he looks even eye to eye with, and that he has such respect for in Chris Paul if he does go to Houston. And he is, for the first time, I believe, staring at his basketball mortality. He knows that if wherever I go next it doesn't work, I'm done.
Yeah.
And so if that doesn't make you go through some type of adjustment, then nothing will. Now, you're hesitant about if he can adjust. Like, if a guy can go through that type of
thing. What was last summer, Nick?
Last summer
he should have had the same attitude that you're talking about right now.
No, because last summer it wasn't an insult. Last summer was an exciting moment for him. Oh, I'm going to a contender. I am a part of a big three. Yeah. Last summer, people were talking about the Thunder as if they could be fringe Western Conference contenders.
He can trick himself to think the same thing now. He's really on a contender now. OKC was not a contender.
I mean, they're a Chris Paul potentially hamstring away from winning a championship.
Mm-hmm.
And so Carmelo, if he were to come here, he has to not only accept but embrace that role, because that's the only way this thing can work. And that, going back to yesterday's point about Team USA Melo, that's the only Melo that works with Houston. Catch and shoot threes, don't put the ball on the deck, and certainly cannot play bully ball.
Listen, last year, there was a ton of excitement in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
There was with the three of them. But three quarters of the way through the season, when it wasn't working and they were like, okay, Melo might have to come off the bench, he didn't want to do that. Remember, we kept talking about it. He was disgruntled.
Right.
He didn't like his playing time being reduced. He didn't want to do it when it was for the betterment of the team. So now you're going to a situation
Jenna,
where you're going to have to,
for whatever it's worth, I don't think that's accurate. I don't think they ever floated taking him off the bench during the season. It was floated at a press conference by a reporter before
early,
the season.
Right. Yes.
And he dismissed it. I don't think they ever went to
And based on them having the roster that they had, it didn't make sense. You go to a stock team, then you ask the veteran that question. Yeah, he probably would have given you a different answer, but I can't look at their roster and them not have a better small forward than me and say, you know something? I think I should be a bench player. No, that would be ridiculous. But I would be more comfortable if Ariza and them was still there and he was coming to Houston as a bench player, because I believe he's a liability if he is a starter.
Here's the last point I'll make on this. I really, and you guys know this, I really trust the Rockets' brain trust, Daryl Morey and those people. I also think I really trust Chris Paul. I do not think they're not desperate.
No.
I do not think they will sign Carmelo Anthony unless they have had all these discussions, unless they are in full agreement on everything about it. Oklahoma City last year was desperate. Oklahoma City thought, man, if we don't, we've got Russ, we've got to try to contend as much as possible. Now that we've got Paul George, let's see what we can do. And they bring in Melo, and it doesn't work out. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll turn out that Melo's done. That Melo, that year 14 was his last productive year. But I don't think that'll be the case.
I'm going to go on record as this. If Chris Paul, in his conversation, talking to Carmelo Anthony, makes him play some defense, it'll be the first time in NBA history that your buddy talked you into playing some D. Because I have never seen it happen.
And they lose in Bob Mute and Ariza, two of their best defenders, most versatile defenders. But here's this with Carmelo. Chris Paul and Harden, they were able to come together and embrace the fact that they wouldn't always have the ball. Specifically Paul, playing off the ball to a degree, letting Harden work. Carmelo's never done that. So, again, it's something he'd really have to do differently. And I don't know if he's there yet.
All right, Jordan, stick around. Coming up, will LeBron regret signing in L.A.? That is next. Back here on First Things First with Jordan Schultz. For the viewing public, it appeared as if LeBron James' decision 3.0 wasn't a terribly tough one. He wanted the Lakers. He signed with the Lakers. But league insiders believe It was a harder decision than most think. The Sixers say LeBron very strongly considered coming to Philly. Jordan, you think the uncertainty in the front office there in Philadelphia hurt their chances of landing LeBron?
I think marginally. I think that the Lakers, for him, always made the most sense because it was the opportunity to resurrect basketball in L.A., win a championship, put himself in the Magic, Kareem, you know, that type of stratosphere.
Where
Elgin Baylor, Jerry West, Kobe. Yeah, exactly. And the fact that Philadelphia was a little bit rudderless in the front office, to me, not that important because Brett Brown was kind of the trigger man, and they have ownership. And I never really thought that from a basketball perspective, the Sixers were a great fit. I mean, they have Ben Simmons. He's fantastic. But he needs the ball as well. And if LeBron goes there, what are you doing with him? He's not making threes. He didn't even make a three last year. So to me, it didn't make a big deal. I think it probably hurt him a little bit, but
it didn't make the most sense.
Yeah, it didn't make the most sense. And going to LA for LeBron was just a bigger than basketball decision. It was a personal decision, and the opportunity, like I said, to win a championship in LA is just different than anywhere else.
I thought he could have fit into Philadelphia, but I didn't think it was a long term. If he did go to Philadelphia, I thought it was going to warrant another decision. And based on what I was hearing from his family, and I knew that the industry, the motion picture industry, all those things LeBron has interest in, media, it's in Los Angeles. So they had a huge advantage going in. So the general manager, that being a small part. What is the roster? That's only a small part, because if not, he don't decide to go to L.A. with all those young players and also a young coach. So I do believe that they do play a role, but unless he wants to make another decision, which based on what we were hearing, that's not what they wanted to do, to make another decision in another year or two, the Lakers was the best decision for his enterprise, for his family. Like I said, it's hard to make a decision to go to Philadelphia, even though it's the closest to Cleveland, and be able to leave his family in Akron and go back and forth. That didn't make sense for me. For LeBron James, because he's going to have to leave there again. And I didn't think he wanted to make that decision.
All right, that last point's the most important one, that if the Philly decision wouldn't have been a lifelong decision, the L.A. one can be. Mm-hmm. Also, we do have to look at the precedent of when LeBron has moved teams, where he has gone. I understand Miami was considered one of the first super teams, but that might, and he brought Chris Bosh with him. But Miami had not won a playoff series since they won the championship. Right. Or they had not won a playoff series in 4 years, and the guy he brought with him had won 3 playoff games ever. When he went back to Cleveland, they had not been to the playoffs since LeBron was there. They had 4 straight years high in the lottery. Now he goes to the Lakers, where they've had five years
straight, yes,
out of the playoffs. LeBron has never joined a team that was at the previous season
ready to win.
Ready to win. Now, Miami became ready to win because they brought the best player in the world and another top 15 guy in Bosh. Cleveland became ready to win because Kyrie was up and coming, and they flipped Wiggins for
Love. Don't forget how much they struggled in Miami. It was not immediately a super team. Now, I know they predicted 5, 6, 7 championships, but that first month and a half, 2 months, man, it was bizarre. Yeah. People had thought they had made the wrong decision.
And by the way, that first month or first couple months in Cleveland as well. If people remember, first couple months in Cleveland, there's a game where Kyrie Irving has 0 assists.
Yeah.
And LeBron says, listen, man, you got to have at least one. Like, you've got to have, you got to find a way to have an assist. That was the game prior to that. He had 1 assist, and LeBron had talked to him in the locker room. So at one point, he pulled a Kobe game 7 against the Suns. He just stood in the corner. Let Kyrie and Deion Waiters
You guys go ahead.
You guys go ahead. Yeah. They end up trading Deion Waiters. They make a big trade. Like, a lot, there was drama early on. And so listen, LeBron, maybe this is hubris. Maybe it's overconfidence. But there's not a lot of math for LeBron about where is the best contending option. Because he believes he goes becomes an instant contender.
Yeah.
And he knows in L.A. they have the, geographically speaking, they are best suited to draw another star.
Yeah, you know, I do a podcast with C.J. McCollum. C.J. says that when you have LeBron, you're a contender. And part of that is the fact that you're going to be able to go out and attract blue chip free agents. And that's what that's what they're betting on. Mm-hmm. Next summer, LeBron's your recruiter with Magic. And maybe you don't get Kawhi now, but maybe you get him next summer or another guy. And now you have an Clay. Now you have an opportunity to build around LeBron. And remember, this is a big ego thing because he wants guys to come play with him. He needs to have that. Mm-hmm. Right now they're not a championship roster, but they will be.
Which is why he didn't need to decide, you know, looking at different teams who would contend. He knew wherever he went he could contend, so he could take the second most important thing, or maybe even the first most important thing, which is lifestyle and family and education and all of it, and make that his primary decision-making.
Yeah, and I think being in L.A. for him is an opportunity that he's never had. That type of bigger than basketball, he had that in Miami to a degree, but it wasn't the same. Now he could, like you said, production company. I mean, this is a different deal for him, man.
Yeah, for at that time in Miami, LeBron was trying to work. He said the move to Miami was like going to college.
Yeah.
So when you're in college, you're not trying to start a business. So the production concept and those things were still
graduate
future.
School.
Yeah. Those things were, they were going to try to do those. LeBron was trying to decide, man, do I drive to work or ride a bike? Man, remember he was riding his bike to work because he was trying to get even fitter. He had the issue with the cramping. Yeah. So he was trying to learn even a deeper understanding of what it is to be an elite athlete. That's where he became a champion. This is where he builds his business empire and his family is able to relax in the Los Angeles area.
I would just close by saying, I you know I've reported this, Kawhi wants to play with LeBron. Now, I don't know if they're going to get him now. I don't think they will. But they are at some point going to have a great opportunity to get him.
And so you are reporting Kawhi does want to play with
LeBron. He wants to play with LeBron.
Compared to what people are saying, that Kawhi now might want to play with the Clippers just because LeBron, the attention, are with the Lakers.
When it comes to the Lakers, Kawhi, the selling point from Kawhi, the conversation he had with LeBron was this: I can alleviate pressure from you for three quarters defensively by locking up. I can be a catch and shoot guy because 2 years ago he tied Kevin Durant for catch and shoot percentage, 38% corner threes. He's a great shooter, Kawhi.
Great
he can play
shooter.
Off the ball, and that was a big selling point. That doesn't mean they're ultimately going to get him right now. But I do believe they will get him, and as a result, I think it's gonna be a great success. I really do with those two.
Jordan, thank you so
and
much
for
being here.
And that podcast he mentions, excellent.
Yeah, with CJ McCollum.
CJ was here, right?
Yeah, he was.
We need more wine.
Yeah.
I plugged your podcast. I need more wine.
I'm coming with that.
I don't drink.
I'm coming with that.
27 years, 16.
Yeah, what do you need wine
for? Yeah, that's
for my friends that drink.
Okay.
I'll bring some wine.
Which, I'll take it.
I got you.
Milo Manischewitz.
The bone broth.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll take that. Hey, which NFC team is primed to take a huge step forward? That's next on First Things First. Moving on to the LA Rams. Their offseason theme, tempering expectations. Despite coming off a great season, making the playoffs, and winning the NFC West, in addition to adding major pieces in Brandon Cooks, Marcus Peters, and Ndamukong Suh, and despite what looks to be a fast, powerful team, so what does Todd Gurley and his teammates make of the high expectations?
We really haven't really even, you know, thought about that. You know, everybody is, you know, 0-0, and, you know, everybody looks great on paper, but, you know, it doesn't really mean anything if you can't go out there and try to put your team in a great position and you know, everyone goes is to win that Super Bowl. So, you know, we start back camp and, you know, kind of just looking forward to getting with the guys and just working hard, man, just taking it day by day and just letting everything else take care of itself.
All right, CC, we know there is a big difference between the way a team looks on paper in July and the way a team looks in September when the season starts. What is the key to the Rams being Super Bowl contenders?
Well, they can't look on paper like their defense did last year. Their rush defense, it was actually a paper defense. Not the roster was on paper. Like, it was not very good. It's hard for a team to be Super Bowl caliber and to be as weak against the run. Because if you want to, how you gonna ground that offense they had? Don't give them the football. And with that lack of rush defense that they had last year, you're talking about problems, you're talking about time of possession, you're talking about wearing out a defense. So Ndamukong Suh, resources right there in the middle. Don't look at Ndamukong Suh's sacks this year. Look at where they go from a rushing team, where they were last year compared to this year's team. I think that's probably the best stat to understand what this defense is doing. Linebacking core, very, very suspect, and even some question marks as far as their secondary in the middle of the field, their free safety, who's going to play that position for him. So there are some question marks in Los Angeles. I know, man, LeBron went to L.A., and Ndamukong Suh went to L.A. Like, right now, the Lakers and the Rams, very, very exciting. But Super Bowl, or maybe NBA championship, maybe a player or two or a season or two away from those expectations.
Here's why I think the run defense is going to be drastically better. Ndamukong Suh, when he was peak Ndamukong Suh, it was not because of the pressures he was getting on the quarterback. Those were an added bonus. It was because he was the league's single best run defender, at least in my estimation. I thought his time in Detroit, he was the best run defender in the league. Let me add this to it. If you can play more man-to-man, shouldn't your run defense get a little bit better? If you have Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters and you can trust them out in man-to-man, can't you dedicate a better portion of your personnel to your run defense up the middle of the field?
In theory, you can do that, but you also set yourself up when you're in man-to-man. The defensive backs have their back to the running back. If he clears the box, if he clears the line of scrimmage, you are talking about a big play. So you're talking about Wade Phillips. What is he going to decide to do? Last year, some of the big runs they gave up, guess what they were doing? The DBs were chasing the guy, and the running back just followed them down the field. So there's a balance there with Wade. How do they play with this man personnel they have with Talib and the other corner from Kansas City, Marcus Peters? How do they make these guys play zone because it helps the defense compared to helps them individually?
And they even have a good nickel corner, right, in Roby Coleman. Here's the thing with the Rams. I have questions about Jared Goff being more than a dinker and dunker. And I know that last year, I think it was 8 yards per attempt, so that doesn't feel like dinking and dunking. A lot of that's run after catch. I saw him miss Sammy Watkins a ton last year on deep balls. They bring in Brandon Cooks, who that's his specialty, right? Like being able to take the top off the defense. But this is a team, aside from, I would say, questions at inside linebacker and tight end, they've got near elite level talent every level of the football field. We know how good Todd Gurley is. We know they spent all that money on their left tackle, Andrew Whitworth, going into last year, and then they also have Roger Saffold next to him at the guard position. We've talked about Ndamukong Suh. Aaron Donald might be the best defensive player in the entire sport. And then they add those two corners. They have the safety, LaMarcus Joyner, who they brought back, I should say. I like the talent on this team. I like the coach on this team. I understand when you look at their rankings, you're like, wow, 28th in rush defense. That is a flashing red light. And I understand that part of it. But if Goff takes another step forward because he took an enormous step year one to year two, this team is on par talent-wise with the Eagles and the Vikings in the NFC, and I think those are the two most talented teams in the NFC.
The biggest difference between them and the Eagles is how good they're on the offensive line. All right, the Rams, they got Whitworth last year from Cincinnati. He helped solidify that offensive line. But when we talk about, especially Philadelphia, their great offense and defensive line, not only their starters, but the depth for which they have. Also, this Rams, their roster, their starters are good, but their backups don't have a whole bunch of backups that you know about. So if their frontline guys get hurt, what will they go to? For me, besides the defense trying to improve on rushing, their intermediate passing game, I believe, in Jared Goff, I expect in year three for him to be able to make that step. The offense coordinator and the head coach did a tremendous job of getting him comfortable. And I expect Brandon Cooks to be a better deep threat because he is he's more decisive and he's easier to read and route and run his routes than Sammy Watkins is. There's a reason why Sammy Watkins has bounced around to three teams. Brandon Cooks was very, very successful last year with Tom Brady. I believe a lot of the concepts, what they did offensively for New England, they will do them with the Rams
for
Brandon
Cooks. This is a team that was already tracking upwards last year that added bits and pieces to both sides, that's got tons of speed. Just a lot of positivity heading in. He doesn't know about Super Bowl contending. How far does this team go?
Listen, I think that their best case scenario is they win the Super Bowl. Like, that's their best case scenario. They're a team, like you said, that was a playoff team last year, that was a dangerous playoff team, I thought, last year, even though it didn't look it in their playoff loss against Atlanta. And they added a Pro Bowler at wide receiver, two Pro Bowlers at corner, and a Pro Bowl caliber player on their defensive line. Like, I think they did more than add bits and pieces. I think they added more quality personnel in the offseason than any other team in the league. It's, will the quarterback regress? How much can they shore up that run defense, which was their biggest weakness last year?
All right, let's take a break. Go back to some basketball on the other side. Coming up, why Kawhi Leonard might be traded sooner than later. Next on First Things First. Cup wake up France will take take on Belgium after beating Uruguay 2-0 in the quarterfinals. Belgium held on against Brazil 2-1 to make their first semifinal since 1986. Coverage starts at 1 p.m. on Fox. Nick Wright, besides a couple hours of incessant texting with me, what are you expecting in this matchup?
Listen, I'm expecting it to be, by soccer standards, high scoring. I think three goals win this game. I think it's a 3-2 game for France. I think Mbappe is the star of the game. Listen, Belgium, you could make the argument to the best team left in this tournament. I think they are running up against the only team left in this tournament better than them in France. I think at all three levels, they're great. And so I think it'll be an epic game that not a lot of hanging back and just trying to defend. I think a lot of attacking football.
No, definitely a lot of attacking football. You also have to remember in the semifinals, everyone has a clean slate, so there's no yellow card. So France will try to get Mbappe into space to try to create, because that's where he has the advantage. But with no yellow cards, look for him to be on the ground an awful lot. So watch the theatrics in soccer, which they bring, because it's going to be probably the most physical match that we've seen.
And when CeCe says no yellow cards, people don't know if they just check him for the World Cup. If you get yellow cards in back-to-back games, you're suspended for the next game. You don't have to worry about that in this round.
In the semifinals, you have a clean slate.
They're not going to suspend guys for the World Cup final.
You can still get a red card.
Correct. Unless you get a straight red or two yellows in this game. But one yellow does not get you out of the World Cup final. And because of that, guys might be a little more aggressive.
That's good to know. All right, good stuff there. Time for some stories to start your morning. The Toronto Raptors are generating buzz as another spot where Kawhi Leonard could get traded. Nick, any chance Kawhi ends up in Toronto?
I mean, a minuscule chance. It would be an intriguing team, at least in my eyes, that you were the best team in the regular season in the East last year. You would obviously probably trade DeMar DeRozan, and then you would get a significant upgrade in Kawhi Leonard. It'll also be somewhat, I mean, it would be a little twisting of the knife by San Antonio. Oh, you only want to go to Los Angeles. Well, we're going to send you geographically about as far away from Los Angeles as we can and out of the country. I don't think it's likely to happen, though.
I go to Toronto about once a year. Unless Kawhi wants to go up there and watch, I'm going to try to see my son. They play CFL, play Toronto. They play inside up there. Well, they play outside, and they got a new stadium. But I like to get to T.O. at least once a year, twice. Kawhi's not going there. Based on my conversation with the people, Kawhi's not going to Canada.
Even though if he were there, he would get to guaranteed to see you at least once a year? That's not enough of a draw?
Man, Kawhi ain't interested in seeing me. No one with the Spurs right now. No, only thing he want to see is Los Angeles. Hollywood, the hills, my friend.
Moving on to Jaylen Brown. Despite scoring 14 points a game last season and turning a number of heads, Jaylen says he isn't too good for summer league and will consider playing a couple games despite the risk of injury. CeCe, is this a smart move?
Well, it's not a matter of it being a smart move. You want younger players who want to play. We've seen in professional sports where a lot of guys, they don't love to play. They don't love to compete. I like the attitude of the young player. Had a great regular season and even had a better postseason where him Jason Tatum, both of them scored more points than they did during the regular season. So very, very productive, exciting future for the Boston Celtics.
Brown was excellent in the playoffs until that game seven. And I understand why he wants to get that taste out of his mouth, but he is flatly too good to play in summer league. Like that, it is too much of an injury risk, and he is too good. The guys in summer league are the guy I was talking about in the last highlights, Chris McCullough. He's been in the league 4 years trying to finally get his established. Not a guy that is a fringe all-star potential down the line.
Maybe Houston can send Melo to the league to show him how to play some defense.
Oh, my gosh. Just all this hate on Syracuse guys today.
Well, we're just trying to play a little D.
On to former Knicks center Kyle O'Quinn. He signed a deal with the Pacers this offseason and told reporters he left because he, quote, wanted to play for something more than next year's draft.
Oh, okay.
Kyle. Ouch. Pazing. Jam. Tough words Jam. For his former team. Made that one up. Nick, what do you make of O'Quinn's shot at the Knicks?
First of all, I do love that sometimes Jenna, after someone has a diss, she does. You remember those old Batman
shows? Yeah, that's where it came
from. Someone would throw a punch Pam. And be like, bazinga!
Wait,
like,
that's exactly what I was doing.
I know, Jenna. I've been working with you for a year. I knew what you were doing. I wasn't sure the audience knew, so I was trying to Thank be a little translator there. Listen, Kyle O'Quinn says, the Knicks, it ain't great when the players the caliber of Kyle O'Quinn decide, you know what, I got flames for you, New York. I don't want to be here. I want to be playing for more than ping pong balls, so I'm going to Indiana. Like, it ain't great. Now, the Knicks have some interesting young talent, but they are playing for ping pong balls this year.
Kyle O'Quinn, Jenna, do you know what he was known for this year with the Knicks?
Tell me.
Going to a dang on bar mitzvah. That's what he was known. He got the most publicity for going to a bar mitzvah. That's what we know about him. Now, I went to a bunch of Knicks games.
I thought you were going to say a bunch of bar mitzvahs.
So did I.
Well, I've been to a bunch of bar mitzvahs and everything. I'm cool with the tribe. I'm cool with them. I'm down with that. Bas mitzvahs and bar mitzvahs. I do both, Jenna.
Wow, CC. I'm impressed.
So he was mad he ain't going to be able to do none of them in Indianapolis. Hurt his pocketbook.
All right. Whatever. Finally, LeBron James took some time off from his vacation to officially sign his new four-year $154 million deal with the Lakers. He even took a picture with his agent Rich Paul and Lakers GM Rob Pelinka to capture the moment. Nick, what's the ceiling for LeBron and the Lakers if they don't acquire another star this offseason?
Oh, so this is interesting. The ceiling for the Lakers is presently constituted. Is the question, right? The ceiling for the Lakers as they are right now.
Yeah, that's what I said.
It is, but we don't have anyone else yet.
I think it's because so much of the Lakers' discussion has been about if they get another Damian Lillard, if they get
right
another guy.
It looks and stands right now.
As it looks right now, I would say the ceiling is with a good draw in the playoffs, the Western Conference Finals. I would say the ceiling is losing to the Warriors, whenever they play them in the playoffs. Could this team, when I say a good draw, they get the 2 or the 3 seed? Could this team make it to the Western Conference Finals? Sure. Like, that's the ceiling. I saw LeBron with worse teammates last year, and I understand the West is tougher than the East, but I saw LeBron go through a Raptors team that would have finished high, even if they wouldn't have gotten 59 wins, they would have been a 50-win team out West, go through them. I saw him go through a Celtics team even without their two stars in the playoffs, they had been outstanding at home and great defensively the entire year and postseason. So the ceiling to me would be the Western Conference Finals if they don't add another star.
I'm going to make my ceiling be a little bit lower. This team hadn't been in the playoffs in 5 years. Now, they have one of the greatest histories in the NBA. LeBron is trying to wave the 17th banner for the Los Angeles Lakers. They have won 16 trophies. So, to me, getting back into the playoffs, if they were like OKC, where they lost in the first round, I would think that would be a successful season. Them back in the playoffs with this young collection of players having a successful regular season and being in the playoffs, LeBron's first, and gearing up for free agency 2019, I think that's the ceiling for them. I think going to the semifinals or the finals in the Western Conference, that's a little pie in the sky at this point.
I'd be remiss if I didn't just ask. If they did get Kawhi, do you see them beating the Warriors?
By the way, I think that's exactly what I was about to say. I think their ceiling
is the same.
Yeah. I think the ceiling is losing to the Warriors. This team, with or without Kawhi, with or without Damian Lillard,
loses to the Warriors this year.
Absolutely, is losing to the Warriors.
All right, well, speaking of Kawhi, CC, as of this morning, he is still a Spur, but only on paper. In his mind, he's seemingly all but gone. And one Western Conference executive agrees, saying the Spurs will deal Leonard sooner rather than later. The destinations seem all but locked into Los Angeles. But again, this could have a surprise ending. CC, how much will the eventual trade of Kawhi impact the balance of power in the NBA?
Because I believe he's going Western Conference and staying in the Western Conference, and he's going from a dominant franchise over the last 20 years compared to a dominant franchise over the last 40 years, I don't see the balance of power switching in the West. LeBron has decided to come to the West, so the power is still in the West. No, I don't believe Kawhi changing because I believe there's only one destination. That's Los Angeles, that being with the Clippers or being with the Lakers. So I don't see a huge change in power from Eastern Conference to Western Conference because LeBron, they were only really viable threat in the East without Kyrie, without Gordon Hayward, the young Philadelphia team. So, no, to me, it doesn't change the power structure that currently exists in the NBA.
These conversations are so hard because of the Warriors, right? So, like, the Warriors make it feel like doesn't really matter what teams do as long as they are doing what they're doing. And, by the way, adding Boogie Cousins this offseason. But even though we all believe that Kawhi Leonard is eventually going to be a player for one of the Los Angeles teams, if he were to be traded out East, it would have dramatic shifts to me on the balance of power. If Boston were to just say, you know what, screw it, we're going to go all out against Golden State this year. Maybe Boston thinks, you know what, Boogie made them worse. They're going to be worse defensively, not going to be better offensively. He's going to be a locker room distraction. They can get got right now. That Kawhi added to Boston gives Golden State the closest competition. I think they would be a better team than Houston was last year, and Houston took them seven games. If Kawhi goes to Philly, now I already think Philly next year will end up being the best team in the East, but if Kawhi goes to Philly, they are clearly next year the best team in the Eastern Conference. I feel the same way if we talked about the Toronto thing earlier, as pie in the sky as that is. Listen, Kawhi Leonard is a franchise-altering player, and so it's I don't think it's fair to always do the can they beat Golden State, because we don't know that anyone can beat Golden State. We don't know that anyone in the history of basketball would beat this Golden State team. But could he change the hierarchy? The only place that he would go this year that's on the possibilities that I don't think would, that I think wouldn't cause ripple effects in the NBA is if he went to the Clippers. Because I just don't think the Clippers have enough talent to make them anything interesting. Could he make them a playoff team? Sure. But I don't think to do any real damage.
Do you really believe that going anywhere in the East will shift anything or change anything with what, how stacked and how powerful the West is? And not even to mention the Golden State Warriors?
Well, you only got
to
beat
Boston,
one team.
Boston and Philadelphia, those two teams? Absolutely. Man, Golden State wouldn't want to see that. They wouldn't want to see Kawhi because none of those other teams have an answer for KD. Boston and Gordon Hayward's no answer for KD. KD going to shoot over right over top of his little moose thing he's got, no matter what kind of hairstyle he got going next year. Flip over, part, whatever. He's got a great hairstyle. It's not, no fun
nice
with
hair. He's got great hair. Yeah,
yeah.
No.
But let me tell you, KD's going to shoot
over
right
the hair.
Over the top.
Over
and
the top.
Not we, – we, basketball fans know the impact of Kawhi. And if he was able to join those teams, it would change things. But Kawhi, in meeting with Pop gave him every indication that he was going to trade him and he was going to try to make Kawhi happy. I never said that before because I was holding it till now. So all these discussions about Kawhi going to the East, I believe Popovich is trying to accommodate Kawhi and trying to please him.
But that is listen, that's very noteworthy and newsworthy because a lot of people have said that initially the Spurs were like, we're going to trade him anywhere but the West Coast. We're going to trade him anywhere but the Western
Conference. Because
logical
thinking is, why would the Spurs want to help Kawhi out when he doesn't want to play there anymore? So why would we give in to what he wants?
Because if you do help him, you're going to fetch the best of talent and picks. All right, because why would Philadelphia and Boston give him two starters and two picks? Why, when he's only going to be there for 1 year, if he shows up? Well, you can't guarantee me Kawhi is going to show up at your facility. If you're Boston, you Philadelphia, and you trade for him today.
I was going to say, if you know that he's going to the Lakers and he wants to play with the Lakers, what incentive do the Lakers have to give up a ton for him?
An extra year.
To
an extra year with him.
And get him now with LeBron. LeBron's going to be 1 year older next year.
And because the Lakers don't know he's going there. The Lakers know that in a year he wants to be in Los Angeles, but they do have the additional team in the market. But the point that, because you hadn't said that on TV, but you and I had talked about this, see, that Pop was, from your understanding, very judicious with his words. Listen, I am going to try to accommodate your request, but it cannot be at the expense of the Spurs.
No.
And so
I got a job to do. And the number one thing is,
go ahead,
make sure that I replenish the talent and leave this franchise that they are going in the right direction. That's my responsibility to San Antonio Spurs.
So the point that I'm making is, we know the Clippers don't have the assets. If the Lakers are stubborn, if the Lakers just flatly say, we are not including Brandon Ingram in any trade, we think he is an all-star, we think he's going to be an all-star quickly, we would rather sacrifice a year without Kawhi to keep him and then get Kawhi on the back end. If that happens, then the East Coast is available, because then the best option, the best trade might come from Philadelphia, might come from Boston. Now, those teams reportedly recently, Boston was not even including Jaylen Brown. Philadelphia was not even including Markelle Fultz. If things change, we have to be open to the possibilities that next year, I feel like I'm only confident there's one place Kawhi Leonard will not play basketball next year. That's San Antonio. Everything else is at least theoretically still possible. And would that change the balance of power? Of course. It would take the Spurs out of any type of contention, and almost any team he goes to me, it would make them contenders within their conference, and if it's the right team, a theoretical threat to Golden State.
Can't believe you think he's going to Toronto. That's just crazy.
Yeah. That's exactly
hot takes. Coming up, Will Boogie Cousins' adjustment to the Warriors be harder than people think? Special guest to discuss next on First Things First. Welcome back to the show. NBA analyst Sarah Kustak is here. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
Of course. Good to see you. We're talking a lot of Boogie Cousins this morning. If you are spending your NBA offseason waiting to purchase your Boogie Cousins Warriors jersey for his debut, don't stress out. You got time. Boogie's still recovering from an Achilles injury he suffered in January. And while he recently told reporters he wants to be ready by training camp in September, Warriors GM Bob Myers has a much different timetable in mind.
You can't really tell with a guy, any guy, him or any guy, until they get on the court and do certain things.
Sure.
But the goal for us would be to have him in the playoffs. That doesn't mean we'll wait till the playoffs, but when he's ready to play, he'll play. We just don't know when that'll be.
So, I mean, it's a little bit of an insurance policy he's sort of laying out there to maybe temper expectations, right, Sarah? Just to make sure everyone knows that, yeah, it'd be great, but in case he doesn't, here's the reason. We want him to be healthy. How hard is it going to be for Boogie to fit in to that, you know, idea that the Warriors brass has for his time?
That's the great way to phrase the question. How hard is it going to be for Boogie to fit in? Because he's the one that's going to need to do the fitting. I think smart move by Bob Myers. No pressure.
Yes.
No rush.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Keep the timetable open so the media is not constantly asking at the start of training camp in December and January,
yeah,
when are we going to see Boogie? So I think that was very smart on his part. And when it comes to Boogie, the Warriors are going to win with or without him. So it's not a matter of when he comes back to help them win. It's about how he fits in, how he acclimates to the system. And more than anything, what does Boogie want? What are his goals? Are his goals to think about, let's not forget, he was primed for a max contract prior to getting hurt. And so now, is he coming back to win a ring, to win a championship, to fit in with a team, to show what type he can be in a winning culture and in a locker room? Or is he thinking about his next contract? So I think a big part for Boogie is going to be understanding the way the Warriors play. And I think he can be a perfect fit. I mean, he is a guy, how could he not fit into the way, into the style of which the Warriors play? But limited minutes, limited touches, limited numbers, can he be okay with that and still be a good teammate?
Listen, to me, this is part of the mental games that are already at play here to a degree. We are trying to set expectations, then reset expectations. We are trying to, if in January he is cleared to play, but those first few games, it's getting 8 minutes or 10 minutes. They can say, listen, remember, the goal is just the postseason. We're going to be really slow with you. Always continuing to tell him, Boogie, everyone knows how great you are. The whole league knows you're the best offensive big man. All you got to show is that you are fully healthy on the stage you've never played on, the NBA playoffs. That is what I believe the Warriors' true goal is, because what Bob Myers described there is untenable. If DeMarcus Cousins is not ready to play until right before the postseason, then he will not play. Like, what the Warriors will not do is go through the 90% of a regular season with one rotation, with one lineup, and then all of a sudden try to, barring a major injury, try to fit Boogie in their most important part of the season, the playoffs. So what Bob Myers is describing there won't happen. I can't tell you for certain how this will go, but what I can tell you with absolute certainty is the idea that Boogie's not going to play the first 75 games and then all of a sudden get into the lineup the last 2 weeks of the regular season to ready him for the playoffs, they won't do that.
Let's go through a hypothetical question. Say he comes back. Say he rushes it, even come back, he has some type of setback. And in that setback, it takes him maybe another month to be able to get back where now he's able to play. So we don't know all the scenarios, but there's flexibility within that. If Boogie misses most of the time because he has some type of setback, I believe that the Warriors, because when a player like Boogie has decided that I'm going to come to your franchise, that franchise also realizes that not only win the championship is what the goal is, that franchise is trying to help him repair his image. They realize that. It's a buy-in from them. If I'm going to come there for a lot less money, then you must be trying to help me to repair my image. So if they have a setback from an injury standpoint, I can guarantee what they're going to be saying. Oh, he's been great. He hasn't missed any treatment. The players really love him. And then, because they have such overwhelming talent, they would still try to utilize him in a playoff series because they're that much better. What difference if he didn't play any games during the regular season? You get to the first round of the playoffs. Boogie Cousins wouldn't hurt the Warriors. They're so much better than whichever team that's going to be. So I just believe in Boogie making this huge compromise. He called them. It's up to the organization to build, try to help him at all costs to try to get to the next season and help him get that next. They're trying to get their next trophy, but they also in this. It's baked in. They got to be able to try to help Boogie repair his image
around
the league. So
I believe that. Is there a sense that you, do you get that the conversation went sort of lines of, hey, I'm interested in you, and then the Warriors got together and said, well, where could we use him? Well, we could really use him in the postseason. I mean, that's where we don't really need him during the regular season. They weren't playing their A game, if you will, last year during the regular season, and they kind of just, you know, kind of walked their way in casually. But that's probably where they really do need him. Now it's just the matter of the fact of whether they can get him into the lineup before the
postseason. Well, and I don't, yeah, absolutely. But for the Warriors, I mean, I think they look, who wouldn't take a chance at Boogie at that price? If you're the Warriors and you're replacing JaVale McGee, or you're
of course
replacing Zaza, or
Kevon Looney.
I mean, so it's not like there's some big shoes to fill, and that's where.
That's why I believe he can play in the playoffs. Because the role that they want the center to play, I'm more concerned about how do you miss all this time, say he misses all this time, how do you change style? Because offensively, they do have to change how much they move the ball. Defensively, they also have to change because they switch pick and roll 1 through 5. And you cannot do that with Boogie. So how do they implement these changes if he's not on the court?
Without a doubt. And I think that's where they'll try to figure things out. And to your point about waiting until the postseason, I don't think it's going to take that long. But where do we use them? How do we split up minutes of players on the court so he may be the number one, the go-to option that we run through when more of the second unit guys come in? So I think there are variations of how you utilize his strengths.
Listen, I think we have to also be very honest about what this is. They don't need him for the regular season. They don't need him for the playoffs. They don't need him for the All-Star break. They don't need him for training camp. They don't need it. They swept the NBA Finals last year. Since they added Kevin Durant, they have played 8 playoff series. 7 of them went
I will say this. I do believe that, yeah, they did sweep the Finals, but I do believe that there are 2 teams that will be better than the team they faced, that being Philadelphia 1 year and also Boston. I believe both of those teams have the ability to be better in the Finals than LeBron and the Cavs were.
Agreed.
I do think, because also they could have lost if Chris Paul would have been there. Right. So sitting here saying they don't need Boogie, we pushing it just a little too far.
Hold on, wait. I don't think we're pushing it too far at all. For us to think the Warriors were overwhelming favorites going into this next season, did they need to add a single player, or did they just need to bring everybody back? They would have been overwhelming favorites.
Will we agree that they almost lost to Houston?
Yes, they did almost lose to Houston.
So what would we be saying this offseason? They need to get better, or they need to come back? They're not the world champs.
No, but I will say Houston, I think, without Ariza and Mbamute are a different-looking team.
I understand all that.
But no.
But the Warriors sitting there saying we could just stay like we are, no, that's not what they did.
Hold on. That is absolutely what their plan was. Boogie called them. They weren't out there trying to add some major piece. They were totally content standing pat. Absolutely they were. They were going to use...
Okay, but once they got the phone call, what did they do?
Oh, of course.
They said, we're too good for him.
Because
we're a transcendent franchise, we'll take him too. All these other friends, there was other people on that call. Boogie had other people who made the same offer to him. He decided not to take those.
I also think, though, the Golden State Warriors are so confident in their culture that they didn't think twice about adding Boogie to that. In the team that they have, the organization, the roster they have, what they needed, whereby other franchises felt like they may not want to take that risk with him.
They also had the confidence that if the worst things everyone says about Boogie are true, guess what we have the benefit of? Not needing him, and we can tell him to go home. We can tell him, you know what, thanks, but no thanks. We tried to help you repair your image. You've been a locker room disaster. We told you you weren't going to get touches. You're demanding them. We told you you weren't going to get the minutes. You're demanding them. Go home, because they don't need him, barring major injuries. Now, this is a team that's been almost unprecedented in NBA history over a 4-year stretch, avoiding those major injuries come the playoffs. Now, if they have a major injury, then of course he's a guy that is, to me, all the discussion around Boogie Cousins is it's an insurance policy. It is a guy that if the worst case scenario were to happen to Golden State, they have him there.
I do believe that there's someone in the Warriors organization, our coaching staff, that says, you know something? What if Philadelphia and Joel Embiid, if they get to the finals. You know something? It'd be hella nice to have Boogie Cousins. All right? Now, I just believe, based on how forward-thinking they have been, that someone has thought about that. If Boston gets there, not as concerned. But if my man Joel Embiid gets there, man, you better have DeMarcus Cousins. And I believe that that type of equation, when you're looking at trying to win four out of five, those are the types of things that teams like that, they look at. We're not looking at them because we're not in the business. But I believe teams like Golden State, they should be looking at stuff like that.
All right, Sarah, stick around. Let's take a break. Coming up, could beef with an old coach keep Carmelo out of Houston? That's next on First Things First. Here at First Things First with Sarah Kustoff, we are going viral. Kyrie Irving and Jason Tatum held a basketball camp in Massachusetts. You know what they showed? No mercy.
I love this.
I do this with my kid, too. No mercy. If you're going to win, you're going to win. Not basketball when we're playing board games. I'll just win. No, just to show them that you, I know you do that, too. But anyway, how awesome is this?
This is great. Listen, I love when the NBA guys play the kids, cross them up, block their shot, dunk on them. Do them dirty, man. These kids, they paid to go to the camp. They didn't pay to beat you. Like, they got to earn that. I agree. I'm sure, I bet Chris got experience with this stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the guy that runs pro camps, that's my guy. Greg Derbyshire, Middletown, Ohio.
Oh.
Another guy from Middletown, Ohio.
Do you go out to the camps?
The other guy.
Huh?
Do you go out to the camps?
I have gone to other ones. He does basketball and football around the country.
You're a hooper.
Yeah, but not in a league like that. You see, Kyrie Irving, they're trying to repair the Jason Tatum image there that, oh, Kyrie doesn't like another superstar. Pair him up and do
a
camp.
All these Boston sycophants in my mentions, because yesterday I said, I don't know if Kyrie's going to enjoy how much of the spotlight Tatum's getting, sending me pictures from this camp. I didn't say you don't like Jason Tatum. I didn't say they can't be buddies. Kyrie is a different type of cat, and the type of guy that didn't want LeBron to ever come to Cleveland, and the type of guy that also, by the way, was angry that people were paying attention to his hot take that the earth is flat, might be the type of guy that doesn't love the spotlight being shined even on a good friend.
Why would he be doing a camp with the young kid, though? Because he wouldn't have to do that. He could do a camp on his own. Why would he be doing... Because this was recently formed.
Of course it was recently formed. I never said they don't like each other. But there's a difference between being buddies with a guy and wanting to make sure you are the face of a franchise. Make sure you're the face of the franchise in as close to your hometown as you can get in New York City, whether it be Brooklyn or the Knicks. Like, people can send me these clips all they want.
Sick
about
fans.
All these people whose Twitter handles are Celts, Pat, Sox, 92. Like, zip it. Zip it. Like, there's real reason people like Chris Mannix that cover this team every day say the Celtics are worried about Kyrie leaving in a year. That's not made up.
We got to move on, but yeah. No mercy. You don't have kids, right?
No kids.
All right, when you get kids.
No mercy.
Not block their shots. Okay. No mercy.
Teach them young. Hey, Carmelo Anthony likely will be in search of a new team with all signs pointing to the Thunder moving on. And about that moving on, it is a bit of don't let the door hit you on the way out. Melo coming off a rough year, but it's not stopping the suitors, according to Adrian Wojnarowski. The Rockets are determined to sign him. That despite Melo's previous relationship with Mike D'Antoni when he coached the Knicks. Sarah Kustoff, would Melo be a good fit in Houston?
I've thought a lot about where Melo would be a good fit in, I think, Houston is the best option.
Okay.
But I still go back to having an issue with Melo saying with Oklahoma City that he wasn't okay with a bench role, that he wasn't okay with coming in as a reserve. To me, if you're a player of even his caliber now, but what he was, how do you not say, I am willing to do whatever the team needs to win? Like, he is a guy who... What he's accomplished individually in his career, but having not won a championship, how is that not your ultimate goal throughout the course of your career, but especially right now? So you look at Houston, and it could be a possibility him coming off the bench there. How is it okay to go from Oklahoma City, who believes that they could be a contender, to now a team like Houston and be okay with that role? So I have hesitation in how he will fit in. He showed that he was able to play more catch-and-shoot basketball last year with Oklahoma City Thunder. He's an isolation guy, and Houston is obviously heavy on isolation, but he shot poorly from three. He shot poorly from three, to say the least, in the playoffs. So how is that going to fit into what Houston does? And that's just talking about the offense.
All right, but here, I think we're being a little unfair to Melo in this regard. I do not think he thought he was choosing starting over giving the best team the best chance to win. I think he felt the way to give the team the best chance to win is me starting. And Billy Donovan, when they acquired Carmelo Anthony, they didn't. The coach didn't say to him, "Melo, we want you to come off the bench." The players didn't say, "Melo, we want you to come off the bench." Some dude at a press conference to open his tenure there said, "Would you be open to coming off the bench?" And he scoffed.
And a good veteran player should have been like, "I'm open for whatever the coach thinks is best." If him and the coach hadn't talked about it, if him and the coach had talked about it, he's got an excuse. Hey, the coach told me he's looking at me to be the starter. I'm trying to fulfill what the coach. So as an option at this point in his career, knowing that he was going to be at best the third wheel, the answer, he could have answered the question better, even if he didn't expect to play coming off the bench.
But it was also to meet the end of this season. Mm-hmm. Not just that came up in the beginning of the season when he first signed with the Thunder, but after this season, taking that same stance.
After the year, yes. Going into next season. And listen, he's not going to be there next year. I understand. Like, and that is a humbling experience. But Carmelo was not.
This is the thing. You keep giving credit to it being a humble experience. We don't know if it's humble for Melo. Like, for normal people, it might be. Man, when you got $150 million in the bank, somebody tell you, go home, I'm going to give you another $27 million. That ain't the most humbling of experiences for me.
Well, and he also, before to cut you, he also talked about being uncomfortable playing the four, and he had to move to the four, so mm-hmm. that changed what he did, finding his shots within the offense. Like, the point, to your point about humble, I think he thought in many ways it was the offense they ran or what Billy Donovan did or the position he was put at, and I didn't see a lot of ownership taken by him.
Well, then let me be perfectly candid here. If Melo doesn't recognize he's at a different stage of his career, the Rockets will not sign him. Like, they don't have to have him. It's not like we're like the Rockets or Carmelo.
I don't agree with you on that. Because Melo doesn't have to. In the meeting, all he got to do is answer the questions the right way. When he gets on the court, we're going to see if his mindset really changed. Because Hoodie Melo, last summer, got himself in the shape and everything. When he went to OKC, we saw what the result was.
Yeah, but I also, here's the other thing about OKC, and I want to make this clear. Melo was not good last year. I get it. I also watched their games. Who was the guy that's like, man, he needed more minutes?
Your guy, Russ, though.
OKC.
What? Russ didn't bring out the best in him?
No. That's not what I'm saying. I said, who was the guy who Melo was starting in front of on OKC that were like, oh, he should be getting those minutes?
No, they didn't have the body extra, but it didn't matter. He didn't play well. He's not a good system player, Nick. And we haven't even talked about the other half of the court, the defensive end. We're just talking about right now, he's not that good of an offensive player.
Agreed.
That's where I think it's going to be a question. How do you put him on the floor and then go? Houston switched everything. The way they play, the biggest part of their jump last season was because they improved the defensive side of the floor. And what they were able to do was keep everyone on the perimeter with their switching. Carmelo, I don't see the guy that they will switch to.
They still found 22 minutes a game for Ryan Anderson, who people say what they want about Melo's defense. He is not worse than plotting Ryan Anderson.
Ryan Anderson didn't play in the postseason.
He didn't play in the postseason. I said during the regular season, he played 22 minutes a game. In the postseason, they shortened the rotation to seven guys. They would have liked to have another guy they could put out there. Instead, they're relying on Gerald Green, who I like, but he was unemployed at the beginning of the season. Like, Melo at one point in his career became wildly overrated. Now I think we have flung way too far in the other direction. He shot 36% on six threes a game last year. That can't be useful. Like, that Melo is not a big enough upgrade on Mbah Moute offensively to offset that he's that much of a downgrade from Mbah Moute defensively. Like, again, if he's going to be a problem, if he's going to be a pain, then no, he's not. I do think people can have harsh moments of reality in their profession, losing a job, getting a demotion, and realize, oh, it's me, not you. I need to change.
I think it's exactly what Sarah said. I don't think it's necessarily that he swung too far the other way. When asked hey, do you mind playing a lesser role or whatever, the answer should have been, I'll do whatever it takes to win. I think that's how you keep it from swaying too far over. You brought up earlier in the show a
Who
guy like...
Who have we heard say that? I'm just curious, which NBA superstar's answer has been, I'll do what it takes to win?
Chris Paul.
I'm just curious.
When he went from the Clippers to Houston, hey, you need to hold the ball? Man, I'm going to do whatever I get to win. You sure you and Harden can get along together? Man, I'm here to try to win. And they had 65 games during the regular season, so I got one superstar that I saw do that last season.
That is a great answer, and it is exact name I thought you were going to say, and you're absolutely right. And you know why we remember it? Because it's rare. Guys, Kyrie, one of the 15 best players in the sport, at practice, he said, hey, man, this is what we need to run our offense better.
Okay,
he says,
if man, it's rare, Nick, like, why do you expect Melo? Besides him being from Syracuse, why do you expect him to do it? If it's rare, okay, like we admit, this is real rare.
No, I didn't.
Melo is not the person that I would be as the poster child that, hey, this is how you
see, super- I don't I'm not expecting Melo to say, I'm going to sacrifice to do whatever it takes to win. The point that I am making is that he is short on options. Chris Paul, it was noteworthy because he had all this plethora of options. He goes to Houston where he's going to have to take a lesser role. What are these winning teams that are pursuing Carmelo? It might be the Lakers, who aren't yet a winning team, but they have Bron, and the Rockets. We hear Philly a little bit. Any of those teams are going to come to him and say, are you going to understand where you are in your career? And if not, they will not bring him in.
I don't believe that. I don't believe it. We see guys signed all the time, and they get there, and their role is not the same. And they're signed, and they're on the roster. And for us to think that Melo is going to turn down this opportunity just because, I don't know if I want to be a role player. He wants to play basketball. And if he wants to play basketball, he should change his attitude.
I just think he still thinks he's at the level of CP3, though. I think in his mind, he's looking at, like, this is his boy. CP3 wants him there.
Just because you can still get in the VIP at the club don't mean you still VIP. And that's where Melo is right now. Buying his way in the VIP, but not really VIP.
But if he buys in, I believe he could be good. To circle back, I do believe he's a good fit here, and I think it's systematically, it is different than, for as much as we want to talk about Oklahoma City or Russell Westbrook or how much ISO ball that they play, I think this systematically could work for him, but I believe there has to be the buy-in.
But buying in means Carmelo Anthony doing something he has not been comfortable doing anywhere else, so that's the big if there. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Coming up, which NFC team is primed to take a big step forward next on First Things First? Running back Todd Gurley says his teammates have not been talking about their lofty expectations this season. The Rams are looking for their first Super Bowl appearance since 2001.
Oh, man.
See you in or out on the Rams winning the NFC this season?
I'm out. I like the approach, though, Todd Gurley, and they shouldn't be talking about what's going on. They haven't accomplished anything. They had a spectacular season last year. Their offense was stellar. Yes, they've added three defensive pieces as far as their two cornerbacks, and Ndamukong Suh right in the middle of that defense, which we know will help them. But, no, I don't expect them. There's a couple teams better than them, all right, in being Minnesota and what we saw coming out of Philadelphia.
Is it possible? Of course it is. But right now, would I pick them to be the representative from the far stronger conference in the Super Bowl? No, I would not. So I am out. Their best case scenario is winning the Super Bowl. They have Super Bowl caliber talent, but everything's got to go right. And Jared Goff took an enormous step forward between year one and year two. He's got to at least maintain that level between two and three. They can't afford any regression out of the quarterback.
All right, moving on to the NBA, where this offseason hasn't been great to the Rockets. They'll have to replace Trevor Ariza and Luke Richard Mbamute on the wing. Last season, they won a franchise high 65 games. Nick, you in or out on the Rockets still being as good as they were last season?
I am out, but not because of the Mbamute loss and not even really because of the Trevor Ariza loss. I think they can replace that production and those guys. I'm out because I think they're going to have 85 to 90% Chris Paul as what he was last year. I think he's at the point in his career where he's going to dip down 10 to 15% in production each year because of age. So I don't think they're going to win 65 games again. I don't think they're going to be quite as good as they were last year. I don't know that Harden's going to have an MVP season again. Like, that to me is bigger than the losses of Mbamute and Ariza.
I was going to say in, but man, you do that math on Chris Paul. 10 to 15% yeah. Every year for the next, they signed him for 4 years?
Yeah.
And then you couple that with Melo's going up, Chris Paul going down. I mean, that's...
Well, hold on. Who said anything about Melo going up? See, you do this thing.
We've been talking about Melo the whole, but if Chris Paul is going down, oh, I'm definitely out. I'm out on Houston because I don't like if they add Melo. They've already lost two other players. So, no, they definitely can't win 65 games. And more importantly, I don't see them being up at any point 3-2 on Golden State, which they were this season.
All right, moving on to Kawhi Leonard. There are now reports circulating that the Raptors are generating buzz as a potential trade destination for the Spurs star. Nick, you in or out on the Raptors trying to trade DeMar DeRozan or Kyle Lowry for Kawhi?
I am totally in on the Raptors trying to do it. I think all of a sudden, if you trade either one of these guys plus one of your pieces, whether it's OG Anunoby or Pascal Siakam, one of the young guys they like, maybe a draft pick, even if it's just for 1 year, you all of a sudden are right there in line with Philly and Boston in the East. I know Toronto's like, we are already there. We won 59 games. If you upgrade and add Kawhi Leonard, he would become the best or second best player in the conference, him and Giannis. So I'm in on what it would be for the Raptors, even if it's just a rental. I don't know how Kawhi would feel about it.
You could trade both of them. I'll still be out on it because I know Kawhi's not going to Toronto. So it don't matter. They can give him half of Canada. You can make him knight him, whatever they do up there. Yeah, whatever they do, they can. Kawhi's not going to Toronto, all right? He's only going to Los Angeles. So I got to be out. Why? Because the people told me that they're not going anywhere else and there are no one-year rentals.
They did tell you they're the only place they're going in the United States is Los Angeles. They didn't say nothing about Canada, though. Think about that.
All right.
Oh, yeah, brilliant.
Last, we have LeBron James, who officially signed his contract with the Lakers yesterday. Even though the Lakers are one of the most storied franchises in NBA history, they recently stumbled on hard times. Don't feel too bad. They missed the playoffs the last five seasons. CC, you in or out on LeBron winning a title as a Laker?
I'm in. That was the plan. Him and Magic Johnson, they knew it would take 2 years at least of free agency. That's this year and next. And LeBron with this collection of young talent, I believe, is a playoff team. Him with another superstar, I believe they have championship pedigree. And if they happen to get a couple role players, veteran role players, with that other superstar, yes, I could see them. His goal is to raise that 17th banner. They've won 16 championships there. LeBron wants to be there when they raise number 17.
You give him two for Cleveland. Do you give him two if he wins one in the Lakers, ties him with the Celtics?
Let me see how. Does he go through Golden State? Okay. Let me have a seven-game series, something like that. Then I'll work on my new math and everything.
No problem.
They're trying to create at Columbia the type of math that they're not even teaching us in school.
That's NBA Common Core.
Oh, okay, good to know. I'm in. Will LeBron? The question is, will LeBron win another championship in his career, essentially?
Basically.
Yes, I'm in. Yes, he will. Probably not this year. In fact, definitely not this year. But at some point, yes.
You should call LeBron and tell him. You should sign Melo.